Moved by the horror of 9/11, Ryan Jarabek joined the Marines. This honor student and varsity athlete left his Green Bay, Wisconsin high school and headed for boot camp, only weeks after graduating. Less than 9 months later, on April 6, 2004, Ryan Jarabek was killed in an ambush in our Ramadi. Steve Levin is the producer of the documentary film Jarabek, which follows Ryan's family for over 2 years after he died. Steve Levin says there was an outpouring of grief at Ryan Jarabek's funeral, not only from friends and family, but from the entire community, from scores of people who had never even met Ryan. And Strange Champs asked Levin why the community responded as they did to Ryan's death.
I think there were many things. One of the things is that, you know, Ryan's one of the good guys. He had such potential. He had great goals. He wanted to be a history teacher, very smart kid, treated everybody, you know, great. You really couldn't find anybody that had anything bad to say about him. And for this guy to, for this to happen to this young guy, 18 years old, you know, just right out of high school, I think really put a face and a name to the losses in the war over there and really drove it home. And that's what people latched on to.
When he wanted to join the Marine Corps, I knew he was in trouble. I didn't want him joining the armed forces. I'd rather have seen him gone in a college. He was so intelligent, so smart. But he says, nope. He says, Dad, he says, I'm going to serve the country first before I go, you know. And that was his dream, you know, and to become a Marine. You know, what do you do? What do you do as a father? You know, knowing, being a veteran and seeing so much and seeing the aftermath of a war like Vietnam what do you do as a father?
I think that after 9/11, he even withdrew a little bit, and I was a little bit worried about how quiet he had gotten because he was spending more and more time down here. But I think in the background, a lot of it was that he decided that he was going to join the Marine Corps, and he didn't know how to tell us.
Reed and I really talked about it. You know, should we let him, shouldn't we let him, you know? But he was so confident, and that's what he wanted to be. As a Marine, he wanted to go there first. And I told Rita, I says, man, this kid is not, you know, gonna expect this. This is tougher than he thinks it's gonna be. I says, this is no game.
Ryan Jarabek died on April 6, 2004. That was one of the bloodiest days of the war in Iraq for the U.S. military. It was also the start of the insurgency. What happened that day?
Well, on that particular day, there was a unit that was pinned down by fire, and the call came back to Ryan's unit that they needed some help, and Ryan, as we were told, actually volunteered. I think it was, the first Humvee that went out, Ryan yelled at his commanding officer, hey, can I go? And the guy said, yeah, sure, just be careful out there, and he kind of jumped on the top and grabbed the gun and gave a thumbs up with his smile that everybody remembers so well. And they took off down to help their comrades. And things kind of fell apart from there. The insurgents, as I said, were very well organized. They were kind of drawing them into this intersection. Once they came around this corner, there were the three Humvees. Ryan was the first, and they pulled down to this intersection, and they were just ambushed from rooftops, from a field across the way. It wasn't small arms fire, it was large arms fire, 50 caliber fire. And Ryan, instead of running for shelter, like many of the folks he was in the Humvee with, stayed on top of his gun and provided cover so they could try to get to safety. And apparently he did that while being injured. Reports are that the gun he was shooting makes a very distinctive sound. And the folks in the third Humvee could hear it go off several times, if not four times. He would stop, and then it would go off again. He would stop, and it would go off, and it would stop a final time. And they're guessing that he kept being injured, being hit, but kept the gun manned till the last minute.
When I got to Ryan, I couldn't really recognize him. He had a lot of, you know, a hole on his neck. It's all over his body, pretty much, holes everywhere from shrapnel. From machine gun fire, was, you know, blood everywhere, there's everything. And when I rolled him over, I looked at his name tag, I had complete shock. I didn't know what to think. From that point on, it's pretty much, fog of war.
When we came up to grab the bodies of Jerebik and all the other fallen Marines, we just didn't pick them up and throw them in the back of the Humvee. We picked their bodies up gently, even though we're in the middle of a firefight, and laid them down with respect. We got back to the firm base and we started taking the bodies out, and I held Jerebik's body until we actually had a little tarp or something to put him on instead of just putting him on a dirty floor.
So when I met up with Lance Corporal Hale out there at the intersection and I asked him what happened, and I specifically asked him who died, who got killed, and he told me Jerebik. And I didn't believe him at first, and I was upset. And Hale was kind of the class clown of the platoon, and I looked him dead in the eye and I said, Hale, don't screw around, man. What happened? And he told me Jerebik died. It wasn't right, it shouldn't have been him.
Hi, Mom and Dad, Ryan, calling from Iraq. I'm doing fine. Got more cookies. Make sure that my DVD player and Game Boy are in the mail. Everything's good. I'm good. Well rested right now. Not hungry, but I'll try and call you guys whenever I can. So that's it. Gotta go. Bye.
You talked to a bunch of these Marines, and the death of a comrade is always really hard. But these Marines, somehow the death of Ryan seems to have hit his comrades really unusually hard.
Yeah, I think, they speak about a lot of personal things about Ryan. I mean, he had started this story, and it was kind of a fictional story based on people in the unit. I can only imagine it was a lighter moment for them in a time when they probably had very few light moments.
Being in Iraq, there's not a whole lot to do in your free time and what free time you did have. You can only read the same Maxim magazine so many times. And I think Ryan saw everyone getting frustrated with the way things were going. And he went ahead and he started writing this book. Each of the characters within the book or the story were based on someone else in the platoon. And it was so funny that, when he first showed it to everybody and everyone read it, and everyone got a big kick out of it, a big laugh. And it got to the point where everyone would come back from patrol that day or doing whatever it is that we were doing. And we'd all look for Jerebik, and, we'd go up to him and we'd, all huddle around him and say, hey, did you add anything to the book? Is there a new page? Is there something else that you can give us? And it was kind of funny seeing all these 20-something hardcore Marines coming back from a combat patrol, all huddled around Ryan as he read story time. That was like our time to forget where we were.
One of the remarkable things about this family and the way they coped with the death of Ryan is that they don't seem to ever have gotten angry at the Marines, which you'd think would be a very human reaction. Their son joined the Marines and 9 months later he's dead. But they seem to have, if anything, kind of stepped up their support for the Marines.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I put myself in your position too, and as a journalist, I kept waiting for that to happen. When are they going to make the turn? When are they going to come out against the war? When are they going to come out against the Marines? When are they going to come out how ill-equipped the Marines were? They never did. And, I think they never did because they totally 110% support Marines anywhere in the world in whatever they're doing. It's not the Marines' choice in their mind where they're sent or what battle they're asked to fight. So you have to support them no matter what, whether they believe it's a good battle or not. You can't send them out there knowing that their family's not 110% behind them.
Do you think there's also a way in which they really need to have Ryan's death mean something? They can't possibly say to themselves, maybe this wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You and I can only speculate. How would we deal with a loss like that? By admitting that he died for nothing, by admitting that the war effort over there is a mistake, what kind of value are you putting on what happened to him? So, I don't know if that plays into it or not. I wouldn't begin to try and guess, you know, how they feel about that and why they feel that way. I just know that they do, that they will. I don't see it ending. I see them always being supportive.
Tears are wiped away as family and children plant a memorial for the 18-year-old Marine killed in Iraq in April.
Before President Bush rallied his political backers in Ashwaubenon, he took 40 minutes to thank the family of a fallen soldier.
It was really an emotional time for him to sit with us and talk. And
the president's first question, please tell me about your son.
I asked President Bush before I left to finish this job, get it done for my boy.
Private First Class Ryan Jarabek was killed on April 6, 2004, in an ambush in Ar-Ramadi, Iraq. Steve Levin is the producer of the documentary film, Jarabek. Anne Strainchamp spoke with him. Following in his brother's footsteps, Ryan's younger brother, Nick, joined the U.S. Marine Corps in the fall of 2006.